Hi, buddy. Welcome to Team Sports Line, the Bulldog. Eric Amore alongside, as always. Thank you to three. Handed off to our great friend Phil Bonatti. His outstanding show behind the bench on location all last week. Radio Row at Moscone Center for the Super Bowl. And now on location in Tulare for one of the great events that you find anywhere and the best ag event anywhere in the world. That's World Ag Expo going on from today through Thursday. And Phil will be there. He'll be up as soon as I wrap up today, same tomorrow. And then on Thursday, because they wrap things up there in Tulare at 4 o'clock, Phil will be in this time slot on Thursday. So a busy 3 days. And a lot going on at the station in addition to that, because it's All-Star Week coming up. I mentioned yesterday the All-Star Game in L.A., and I mentioned the Crypt, that the Lakers are home for three in the Crypt, including tonight. But the All-Star Game itself is at the Orwellian Dome. That's right, the Intuit Dome, the George Orwell-like facility that Steve Ballmer put together, where you will cheer and you will like it. And if you don't, there's a camera fixated on your goings-on. Steve created a building in his own image, which is your enthusiasm, real or imagined. It's required at all times. But anyway, I'll tell you all about the schedule for today, which includes not only the Lakers, but a great high school game as well between Clovis West and Clovis North. Get to that a little bit later on, courtesy of our buddy Ed Dunkel and his great business, Precision Civil Engineering. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. More information, 449-4500, precisioneng.net on the web. And when we go over the schedule, I'll mention the great fundraising Ed does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the Lyles College of Engineering on campus, where the goal has been for many years to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years, and a lot of those grads from Lyles College of Engineering go right to work for Ed at Precision Civil Engineering. We'll get to that a little bit later. We'll get to Jackson, talk Bulldog basketball, Fresno State, of course, in Logan at the Spectrum tonight at 6 o'clock. That game is on BMW, and the Bulldogs get as big a test as you can have in conference, which is a road game at Utah State. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. But before we get there, another lead dog, and it's our longtime friends at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, want to allow me the time to tell you about the weather. So they afford me the time, and I'll tell you about it right now and remind you that Lee's been in the Central Valley since 1981. Terrific local people. See the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. I've had them in to do work even during COVID. Very professional people. Really nice and efficient. Competitive pricing. Anything you need. Central Air Plumbing, Heating, or Roofing. Give them a call. 825-5337, 825-LEES, or leesair.com on the web. And they sponsor the Lee's Air Hotline, and that is where Jackson Moore is waiting to speak to us, and where Phil not only has his guests come up, but callers from the general public. So mark that one down, 559-320-1430. As far as the forecast goes, the rains in certain parts of the valley and some of the foothill areas might have started to show themselves a little bit, but by and large, we've had a little bit of delay in what was supposed to hit around dinner time, probably going to be around midnight when we see the first main rain from this particular system. Probably more rain tomorrow than today with this one, and the winds are going to pick up, and there's actually a chance of thunderstorms tomorrow. So be very careful, and obviously if you've already seen some raindrops, be aware of that, because it's been a while since we've had rain, so the roads are going to be really slick. But showers later today, showers tomorrow, again, those thunderstorms, the winds could be up gusting 25 to 30 miles an hour, particularly on the west side of the valley. It'll be a high of 63 today, 62 tomorrow, and then partly cloudy on Thursday. And we will find ourselves getting a little bit more toward the break in the forecast. Matter of fact, let me update the temperatures for you. They have been lowered to 60 today and 59 tomorrow, then the 64 on Thursday with the partly cloudy conditions. The same on Friday at 63. And then we get to what will probably be a more substantial system, rain-wise and snow-wise, on Saturday, with a 63 on Saturday, and then Sunday may be the biggest chance for major rain that we're going to see in a while, and that will be a high of 58, a low of 43. So stay tuned for that, and maybe through Monday we will still have some showers. Then it's supposed to clear, but we will be in the mid-50s instead of the mid-60s where we have been. And this is the start, again, of multiple systems coming through, and we'll see how much rain we actually get, because as I think most people know, the last several years, we've seen a lot of these storms show great promise, and they seem to taper off, and they drift away, or they mainly house most of the moisture in Northern California. But we can use the rain, obviously, would prefer to not have World Ag Expo messed with, and it looks like they'll get through today okay, and Thursday appears to be just fine. It'll be probably tomorrow if there's going to be a problematic time. And the one thing I will mention is what I said the other day, and we all know it. Everything in life is timing, particularly the weather. The Bay Area riding the crest of a very successful Super Bowl, very well received, and obviously with the freezing, and I do mean freezing, sub-zero temperatures across a lot of the Southeast and Northeast and throughout the Midwest, a lot of people looking at great envy with what we have out here. Had the Super Bowl been this weekend coming up, there might have been a completely different perspective, because it is probably going to be really, really wet and sort of ugly. And so we'll see how it works out, by the way, on the peninsula. Every time they play the old Crosby, you always wonder if you're going to get one of those particular weekends. But the Bay Area got lucky in this last weekend to get the Super Bowl in. And hopefully now, after World Ag Expo was done on Thursday, we'll see a lot of rain in our area, but not too much to cause flooding. Anyway, thanks, everybody, at least, for allowing us the time to tell you about the weather. Again, 825-5337-825-LEAVES. LeesAir.com on the web and on the Lees Air hotline. Again, 559-320-1430. Our great friend, our de facto co-host, the king of all East surveys, and a guy who last night watched his beloved Memphis Grizzlies with a great amount of pride, incidentally, channel the Las Vegas Raiders, and with a 15-point lead in that fourth quarter, those Grizzlies up at Chase Center knew it was a must-lose situation for their draft position. So in the immortal words of Archie Bunker, they went in the turlet, Edith, and let the Warriors come back and win. I'm happy about it. Jackson is delighted. Let's bring up Sir Jackson Moore. Jackson, congrats. No team can go in the old John C. Crapper like your Grizzlies. Congratulations.
Oh, Tony, I got on the plane last night and the Grizzlies were in full control. I thought it was all wrapped up, and I landed to see a one-point loss. a Golden State Warrior win over them would have been nice no matter what the season is, but it wasn't in the cards.
Well, those two teams hate one another because of playoff time, but I will tell you this. The one alarming part of it is when a couple of the Grizzlies said, now we can draft Fernando Mendoza. That worried me. You might want to check out, but by the way, I had a doubleheader last night where the old joke in the first game was I went to a fight and a basketball game broke out between the Pistons and the Hornets, where they spared a few minutes of the 48 from beating the snot out of one another to go ahead and play a basketball game. So I know Freddie Coleman was just doing his sports beat there and talking about the Pistons channeling the bad boys. They did a great job of channeling the bad boys last night. I was waiting for Rick Mahorn, who does the color analyst work for their telecast, waiting for Rick to come back on the court and cheap shot somebody. I could be back in my 30s again, Jackson. So anyway, but congrats. I appreciate your Grizzlies view of altruism last night by saying, you know, the Warriors needed a W. What's a 15-point lead with 5 minutes to go between friends, right? So anyway, all right. That having been said, could we – boy, here is a stretch and a half. Could we see generosity from the Aggies of Utah State? I don't think at 20-3 that they're looking at 20-4. That's my guess. And after watching Arizona and Kansas last night, there's something about home court advantage in college basketball that worries me. How do you view this one tonight?
Yeah, especially that one. There's no generosity from them at the spectrum over there at Utah State. It's going to be tough. It's just one of those few games on the schedule where the combination of talent and home court advantage is probably too much to overcome. The line's at 21 points right now, so it's tough to have too high of expectations. But you can't help but think about the last matchup between these two teams when I believe Fresno State's looking a lot better now than they did in that game as well. And it was, you know, there was a good stretch of that game was even. They fell in the hole early, couldn't get over the hump late, but you know, they did play even for a while. And if they can hone that in for enough of this game, maybe they can have a bit of a puncher's chance. But, I mean, it would be a pretty monumental upset. And it's been kind of tough for Bulldog basketball because, like, you look at Utah State, and they are basically the number 31 team in the nation. But, you know, if you're not all that tuned in to sports and you see Fresno State loses to Utah State by 20 points, it feels a little different than if they would have lost to Louisville or Washington, any, you know, major power conference type team. I think people would have a little more understanding. So it's been a lot of that between the Aggies and San Diego State, New Mexico, and it hasn't changed this year despite the Bulldogs making some progress.
Well, I brought up last night, and you know, you see Kansas play the number one team in the country, Arizona, and they're without quite possibly the best player in the country, unexpectedly unable to play, and yet they win, and afterward Bill Self said, we won because our fans wouldn't let us lose, and the Fieldhouse can do that to you. And I said this the other day, Jackson, and the Bulldogs saw this last year. If you remember, when Fresno State went into the Spectrum, it was early in the year, and the student body was on break, and Fresno State jumped out to that big lead, but gradually it got whittled away, and they lost without coming very close. But the atmosphere wasn't there. But I brought up the other day, everybody is on campus right now when you're playing in early February. And because of it, I don't think anybody in the country, Arizona included, could go in to Logan, Utah and have an easy time. Is that fair to say nobody in this country could go into that place and think they're going to roll out with a W?
Not at all. I mean, they've only lost once at home. And I guess UNLV had a little bit of a fortunate night. That doesn't happen too often for a game like that. Was a Tuesday, so maybe the atmosphere will be a little dampened than some of the games that they have tonight for Fresno State. But yeah, it's you know, you go to Utah State, you go to New Mexico, those games just feel pretty automatic. San Diego State, for a team to be that strong at home and that good too. I mean, they are legitimately good. They've been almost as good on the road as they have been at home. But it's that home court; it can turn a respectable loss into an ugly loss very quickly if you don't have a mature team. I think this Fresno State team has probably fared a little bit better than I might have thought they would in some of those cases, but not quite nearly enough to expect a win in one of these matchups.
Well, I brought up last night, you could tell announcers at John Shambi and friend for Schiller were there. It's the Italian crew in there. In Lawrence, Kansas last night, they were just talking about they literally could not hear themselves think. And that's how loud it can get, as you know, in the Spectrum. And it's, you know, part of being in a college town. And look, we've talked about it over and over again, Jackson. There are things about Save Mart Center that, from a creature comfort standpoint, not as comfortable as Celland Arena was. Celland was an old style arena, nice wide seats, et cetera, to get 15,000+ in SMC, you make the seats smaller. And a lot of the little things, little nuances, not quite the legroom, whatever. But you and I both know, if Fresno State were to start winning the way they did win under Boyd Grant in his heyday, the way they started with Tark, if they had 15,000 in, SMC would be a place that would be so deafening you couldn't hear yourself think. So I'm going to ask you one more time, as much as some people blame the building, has it been the building over this quarter century, or has it been mainly the product on the court that's caused the issues?
Yeah, I mean, more so the court. It doesn't feel anything like Celland, but there were some years with Rodney Terry where I just look back at photos of my phone or my old phone. It's been a little while now, and it's almost hard to remember that it was pretty decently filled, at least the lower bowl. I think that's probably the more realistic expectation is, you know, if this was a good product, you could probably get most of that 9,000 bowl filled and have a really good home court advantage. And I think even just earlier this year, But the Wyoming game, the Grand Canyon game, those were crowds of about, reported a little over 6,000, probably at least 5,000 or so in the venue. And those games were loud. There was a really nice home court advantage. Even the UNLV game, which was much less, it just felt like there was a kind of a rowdiness of the crowd, the way that game was so physical and people were getting into it. So you can just imagine if you had 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 in there, it would be a big difference. And I know there's complaints to be had. I just think it's easier to complain about the venue or, you know, not feel the same way when the team's not winning. You know, the leg room feels more cramped when the team stinks than it does if
right.
an exciting game and there's an exciting opponent. So I don't think the gap's too wide from this home court taking a significant step forward. They haven't been able to get over that hump for a while now. And I think it takes something really, really special to get people in that upper deck and expect it to be all the way filled up. I think people are going to be excited when Gonzaga comes to town. I hope that's a Saturday game next year. And I could see that one being a hot ticket. But other than that, it's really on this team itself to put itself in a place where people want to see them regardless of who's in town.
Well, look, your point is on the money, Jackson, and toward that end, as you just brought up, and I've said this on the air for a long, long, because I've been on the air for a long, long time, so I've said it for a lot of years. The true test is when people come out, irrespective of the opponent, they come out en masse because they want to see the home team play. So, yeah. You know, we talk about if Gonzaga comes in, or like we saw a great crowd when the Lopez twins came in with Stanford. That is not the criteria you're looking for. You're looking for people that want to come out because they want to see the home team, whether it's a marquee opponent or a lesser opponent, some compass point somewhere versus some major power. You want people to come and watch your club, and that only happens if you win. And the John Madden line about winning is a great deodorant. It hides all sorts of bad smells in the locker room. You're also correct. Winning is a great deodorant. It hides all sorts of issues in the facility itself, with your fan base, whatever. The Al Davis just win, baby. And this is the thing that we have brought up over and over again. And we talk about it, particularly in football. We've talked about it in regard to quarterbacks. And that is, you don't want the guy who plays just well enough to get you beat. If he's an inexperienced quarterback and he's making progress, you don't say he's playing just well enough to get you beat. You say he's learning through his mistakes. If, however, he's built a long enough resume and he consistently makes three or four really good throws, and then when you're inside the red zone, he makes an inexplicable throw that goes 80 yards the other direction, when that becomes a habit, then you say, this guy plays just well enough to get his beat. I bring this up because this basketball team is making progress. There's no doubt about it. They're much better than they were last year. But is it right now, Jackson, a team that's playing just well enough to get itself beat? Is that the bottom line at the moment?
I think.
And I'm not talking about UNLV, because UNLV did more to win that game for Fresno State than Fresno State did late. And look, I'm not taking anything away from the Bulldogs. I said they did a great job of not letting go of the rope. But UNLV bleeped that one up in the last 5 minutes. So let's leave that aside. Just how do you view it other than that?
Yeah. I kind of view this team where, you know, last year they were pretty much in the bottom tier of the conference. And I think there's a few more layers to it this year, and they've taken a step or maybe two up within those tiers. So when you look down the final stretch here and you've got Air Force and San Jose State coming to town, you can expect to win those games. And not
right.
You know, last year, those are probably 50-50 propositions. Now you feel like those are games you should win. You also look at New Mexico and Boise State, and you probably are good enough to compete, but just good enough to get beat, right, in a competitive game. So that's a step I'm not sure they've taken, and maybe they can. At Wyoming, I think it's going to be a good test. If they can get that one on the road, which I think is a real 50-50 game, I think you get a little more confidence for New Mexico and Boise at home. Maybe they can pull one of those off. If they can't get it done at Wyoming, it's going to be a tough stretch there to end the year outside of the home game against San Jose State. So I mean, I don't think this game tonight's a very good measuring stick for expectations, unless they exceed them, obviously. But there's still a little room here for the team to maybe raise the bar a little bit before the conference tournament.
You know, I was talking with Fertig last week about the nuance of a system, right? And you know this because you played within the confines of a system at Clovis East, and that is the more you play in it, and more particularly the more your teammates join you in playing in it, the more you understand what to do, and rather than consciously thinking about it, you're always in a thought process, but it's almost a reaction. It becomes intrinsic. It becomes second nature, and it's that half-second advantage that you get as compared to having to think about it that enables you to get a layup before somebody blocks a shot or knock a ball away or whatever it might be. And I brought this up, Jackson, in regard to what Al Horford, who was with the Celtics in 22, lost to the Warriors. And, of course, Al is with the Warriors now and made the comment. He said, we, talking about the Celtics, were a much better team physically, had a lot more talent than the Warriors. What we didn't have was the corporate knowledge the Warriors had, that those guys had played together for so long that it was so difficult, because while you're trying to communicate and you're trying, as they do split action and all of this stuff and all this movement, while you are trying to defend this, they are more adept at running it than you are at defending it. And by the time you figure it out, it's too late. You've lost. And I bring this up because this is part of Vance's system, as you know, and has been since he started it at Clovis West. The more Chris Hernandez, great, great point guard, right? Graduated in the early 2000s, went on to Stanford, terrific guy, great player. And he had been in that system since he was like a first grader, for goodness sake, and in the formal system, because of his dad coaching around Vance, from fourth grade on. So he was a guy who knew that system like the back of his hand. When you have other people around you like that, Jackson, the nuance comes into play. And you're able to do things and beat people because of your knowledge and because of your ability to execute. J.J. Redick, of course, is the Laker coach now, said that Warrior split action between Green, Curry, and Thompson, he said he still sees it in his nightmares from all the years he played against it. Said everything you do, they do something else. I know Vance can still do this, Jackson, but as Paul brought up yesterday and we've talked, can you possibly do this when the turnover is so great? Can you run a nuanced system consecutive years when your turnover is sometimes 80 or 90% of your roster?
Yeah, it's a tough challenge because I think there's two parts of it. I think one, you kind of need the right players, the right specific type of guys to run the system that can kind of do a little bit of everything. You know, you need to be good enough from the three-point on the wings to spread the defense out, but also good enough to slash and drive and be a triple threat when you have the ball. And in the age of NIL, you know, you might probably not going to afford too many guys that can do it all. You might be able to afford a good shooter here, a good slasher there, and try to piece it together. So that's a challenge in itself. Now, at the high school level, you don't get to recruit, but as you mentioned, the players are in the system for fifth, sixth grade. They're learning the stuff for like 8 years by the time they're seniors, and they've really got it down, and you're around a lot of other players and teammates that have been through the same journey. And I think that's really where like the full court press and the nuances of the offense really turn a little bit of a corner, and things that either it's the style of the college game or the turnover and personnel, it's kind of tough to implement, I think, right now. But also, again, having the right players to do it, you kind of have to take an approach of getting the best available players you can afford and trying to piece it together later. I think that's why you see, you know, Nathan Zulame probably was your leading defender, the guy you would want to put to initiate the press. And you get a guy like that that tears an ACL before the season, all of a sudden your whole game plan changes a bit. So it would sure be nice if you had a lot of players who could do that and also shoot three and initiate everything. I think one thing that I really liked in the UNLV game specifically was Coach Wahlberg's talked quite a bit about kind of a two-point guard approach, which we haven't really seen this year. And I felt like Zion and Jake did a little bit more of that than we had seen. There were some really nice sets. We got Jake open a few times for some big buckets that looked familiar to what I remembered seeing that I hadn't seen what the Bulldogs do. from Coach Walberg's previous schemes. So, hopefully, again, that's something that next year's roster, you hope you have a reliable point guard, and you hope you have kind of a 6'5", 6'6", guy that can also handle the ball and be kind of a secondary point guard. And then all of a sudden that is going to add a whole lot of nuance to the offense. So really, roster turnover is a challenge in itself, but also you kind of have to put it together like a puzzle, and you may not have all the pieces that you would really like to have.
You're correct. The other thing is, and there's the old Schadenfreude, right? you wish ill on somebody else, and that's how you derive your enjoyment. When guys leave the program, I think there's understandably part of the fan base that says, you left, I hope you fail miserably where you go. The other part of it is the more humanity-based side of it. I think it's a shame to watch somebody who appeared to be on the precipice of stardom in one place, leave to chase money somewhere else, and that person maybe gets caught in the numbers game at a higher level of the game itself, meaning you're playing in a bigger conference, or you're playing with tougher competition, or whatever it is, or greater depth on your roster, and so you get your money, but you get buried in it. I bring this up because the guys like Amunik, and I don't know what's going to happen with his career, but Jackson, under normal circumstances, he would have been the poster child of everything that was right about basketball. And that was somebody who, and we see this with Stickman this year, if he could get healthy, but somebody in Amunik that we thought was going to redshirt last year, and it ended up with him playing. And he played well enough that he's gone. And I don't know that he'll ever be the player somewhere else that he was here, but it can damage the team. It can damage the player. It can damage every bit of the underpinnings of basketball, but you're not going to stop it right now, right? I mean, you just can't. There's no way. If the money's out there, how in the world are you going to say no when it may not be ultimately in your best interest as far as your development? I guess what I'm asking you is, does development mean anything anymore? Or is it the reality that 99% of the guys are not going to play for pay, particularly not in the NBA? So good for them, chase the money, and if they never develop into the kind of player they could have been by staying in one place, then that's just the way it works. I mean, how jaded is your view of this right now?
Even the redshirt for any, it wasn't necessarily like he came in and they needed to develop him for a year. I think the idea was they thought they had enough players to roll with that they could hide him and redshirt him for a
yes.
year and develop him and have him even better the next year, but kind of knowing if he played, they weren't going to be able to keep him around, and that's exactly what happened. Obviously, they were in desperate need of players by just a couple games into the year, the way that things shook out last season. So, maybe there's a case where if a guy like that leaves and doesn't do so hot, maybe you can get him back on the rebound the next time around. If they're back in the portal, that might be something that could be in play for a guy or two, perhaps. I think you used to think of transfers as really burning bridges, but I just don't think that's the case right now in today's landscape. Some of them are going to happen that way, but I think when a coach knows a player leaves for money that's available that they can't match, there's not a whole lot of hard feelings. I think as a team, you kind of hope you just have enough players in that sweet spot. You probably assume you're going to lose some guys, and as a coach, you're going to have guys on your roster that didn't live up to your expectations, and you kind of want to clear them out and try to upgrade your roster there. So you just want to have enough guys in that sweet spot that have played some minutes that probably maybe weren't quite good enough to get a big offer somewhere else, but are still valuable to your program and can keep a little bit of a core. There wasn't much of that last season, basically just Zion as far as guys that were actually on the court. This team, it's a bit younger, it's obviously a lot deeper. If they can keep 3, 4, or 5 guys around and that actually played, it's going to be a lot different offseason when you can focus on just a couple of additions rather than a whole massive new roster.
Matt Norvine, we're talking last week about the reality of it, and I think we're both in lockstep, and I think a lot of people are with us, that it should just be 5 to play 5. Your eligibility clock starts when you are on the roster for the first time. And from that point, you have 5 consecutive seasons, no exceptions, to play. period. You can play 5 years if you'd like. You can play in five different institutions if you like, as long as you keep enough course credits to be eligible, 12 units or whatever. You don't have to matriculate toward a degree. That's unrealistic to think transferring like that, but you do need to stay eligible. But that you just go ahead and you have 5 years to cash it in, and whatever happens, happens. And if you bounce around and come back to where you started, so be it. Jackson, is that the most fair way to do this? Stop all the other exceptions, stop the waivers, stop this and that, and say, you know what, you're roughly 18 when you start or whatever it might be. You have five consecutive years. You can play up to five, period, end of story, then you're done. Is that the best way to do this?
I wouldn't be upset if they went that route, man. I kind of assume that's where we're headed. It also seems a little peculiar that football players can play four games in red shirt, but if you play 1 second in basketball, you burn your year. Maybe I'm surprised we haven't seen a little bit of effect there, where maybe freshmen could play a handful of games in basketball and not burn it, but we haven't gotten there. But I do anticipate, though, if they make a sweeping change like that for football, it will be across the board. It makes a lot of sense. I think the redshirt is a neat thing that makes college athletics unique, but it's gotten to a point where it's a little tough to police, and the exceptions seem kind of subjective. I know there's some players, even at Fresno State, where some guys got that extra year and some didn't, and there wasn't a whole lot of difference between the situations. So it would just be a pretty clean setup to have five for five.
Keep in mind now.
I wouldn't mind seeing teams go maybe like 2 year contracts for NIL,
right,
perhaps. Maybe to avoid five different schools in 5 years. Maybe you get like an undergrad contract, an upper grad, and a graduate. I think that's reasonable. And if the money's big enough, you almost feel like teams might need to lock in players for 2 years compared to one if that offer's on the table. But five for five sounds fine. Five schools in 5 years, which is kind of already happening for basketball, it just doesn't seem all that sustainable.
Yeah, well, we saw a guy in a Rose Bowl uniform who was in his fourth school in the time continuum in the last 4 years. So anything is possible. And I will tell you this, Jackson, that at this point, I think we're at the football stage where it's not four games and you maintain your eligibility, it's nine games and you maintain your eligibility. So I think you have a good amount of leeway, that's for sure. A couple of things here specifically about Fresno State. One is Zaion Collins. Look, I've made this clear. My frustration with Zaion is a lot of the stuff that keeps happening. They are not major issues. Obviously, Zaion had a horrifically major issue that we're all well aware of prior to coming here. But I've said this on air, and I'll continue to say it, Fresno State, and not just Vance, but the entirety of the administration of Fresno State, took a chance on Zaion. Zaion had every right to be a student here, but it was the coaching staff and Saul and everybody who decided to give him an opportunity to play. They did not have to do that. He has been a good player when he has been there on the court, fully engaged playing. But there have been a lot of little things, showing up late for practice, this and that, some temper tantrums, other things that have really disappointed me, because I have felt as though, first of all, he's a little bit older because he had a number of years away from the game. And so it's not like he's an 18-year-old. But also, when people take a chance on you the way Fresno State did, I think you owe it to them to be a little more careful. And every time I turn around, he's late for practice, this, that. He's not starting. Jackson, what's going on with Zaion? Is this a maturation issue? Is it a character flaw? I mean, he's a very good player, and he's very important to this team. But I'll tell you what, he drives me out of my freaking mind some of the time. What about you?
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's some issues, but the issues dealing with them compared to not having him at all are two very different, you know, tips on the scale. When the Bulldogs have a game where he's absent or injured, it's very obvious and noticeable. It felt like the season might have been over last year when he got dinged up and missed the game, and the Bulldogs had an ugly day. And thankfully, it wasn't anything that kept him out too long. And I think the same thing probably happened in the offseason. It was if he wants to look somewhere else, which he did enter the portal, it's easy to forget now. It wasn't such a scandal anymore. But he did hit the portal and withdrew later. And
right.
I think also Fresno State probably went to go see if they could upgrade and probably found out that they weren't going to be able to. And both sides felt like that was the best route. So, there's going through some things now. Wouldn't be surprised if a similar situation this offseason as well, because Zion's putting up basically identical numbers to last year, and he's older, so you would think his stock would be even less than it was last year in the portal. Who knows how much more money Fresno State's going to have or not. So you got to tweak it to a certain degree, but also you don't have a lot of leeway to totally dismiss a guy like that either.
When you and I talked last Tuesday and then Friday, we had talked going in to the UNLV game how important it was that the team was able to defend home court. I don't think anybody could have foreseen the craziness that was going to ensue over 3+ hours. And I mentioned to you on Friday that that may have been the longest regulation game from the time it started, real-time clock running time, not basketball time, the time it started to the time it ended. I don't know that there's ever been a longer 40-minute game that didn't have that was devoid of a major stoppage because of an injury or because something wrong with the clock or something wrong with the rim or whatever. There was none of that. It was just everything on the court. All the delays were because of reviews, this and that, fouls, etc. The game took 3+ hours to play. Okay, you win it. We both felt they'd have momentum going in to Reno. The first 30 minutes roughly of the game, Jackson, in Reno, the Bulldogs had a great handle on that game. Was it a game of just well enough on the court playing-wise to get you beat, or did they learn something that is going to help them going forward? Because it had a very similar look to it, in all honesty, late in the game.
Yeah, you would have hoped that they learned from the last one against Nevada and were able to get over the hump this time around. And it was
Very
similar the way that they lost both games. Again, Saturday in Reno, we're playing pretty good basketball. They got a pretty good home court advantage, makes it tougher. But there's about 35 minutes of that game. Those two teams were pretty much dead even. And then there was about five that really got away from the Bulldogs. So they got to find a way to put it together and get over that hump. And Utah State's not an easy way to try to figure it out, but there's definitely some games where if they can put that 40 minutes together in these last few weeks of the season, they could get some pretty decent wins out of it.
You and I have had this conversation the last several weeks that this is a team, Fresno State, of greater depth, certainly, than they had last year. And they do have some players like Hybreeder that you say, you like to see the ball in his hands late. But as far as knowing for sure, Jackson, how, whether you want to call it clutch time or crunch time, we've been down this path before, knowing where the ball belongs in the last 5 minutes, we know it, the initiator is Collins. But whether that ball belongs in Collins' hands to take the deciding shots, or whether it belongs to Gorey now, or whether it belongs to Hybreeder, or to Douglas, who is a terrific shooter. Douglas is another guy, the best ability is availability, as you know. Is this one of the major problems they have, Jackson, vis-a-vis the teams they're playing? Never mind the talent differential, but the Bulldogs still don't know to this day exactly where that ball belongs in crunch time?
Yeah, well, I think they've settled on Jake being that guy, but he's just not quite the player that's going to get his own shot. So there's only so many things you can do in those scenarios, and trying to
draw the other team
down,
knows it. Yeah, you've got a problem, Jackson. Yeah. If the other team is aware of it, you got to do something else, right?
I would say so. I think there's a confidence that Heidreiter can either get a decent layup look or draw a foul. If you can make, miss, or draw a foul, you've got 2 out of 3 scenarios where you're probably scoring 2 points. So I think that's a little bit of how they look at it. It would sure be nice if they had a guy that could just ISO and get his own shot. I don't think they have that there. But you can try to draw something up, but if the ball gets too far away from Heidbreder and Douglas isn't open for three, you might get someone in there that panics a little bit. It feels like that's what we saw earlier this season at home in a close loss. So I think they've got options, but there's no real ideal way to go with it. You might want to ride the hot hand a little bit. We talk about depth, but it seems like every game it's basically three or four guys that score. It's not always the same guys. It's pretty much Jake and a couple of others, usually Gorey or Heidbreder. But it would be nice. When I think of this system, I do think of the bench being a little more productive and interchangeable, and it's just been not enough guys on the same page on a lot of nights. And it's still been a vast improvement, but it feels like they've got enough guys that can play on the roster to where they're not quite getting enough juice out of the bottom of the rotation.
The close games that have gotten away, how many of those games have you seen the opposition basically say, no matter what you try and do, we are going to get the ball in the hands of our closer. You can double him, you can front him, you can do whatever you want. A la Curry, he's going to get the ball and he's going to decide this game. Has that been one of the big problems where you talk about, you know, Heidbreder being a situation where he is a very good player, but it is possible, because he's not overly athletic, to take him away where other teams have been able to get the ball in their closers' hands and the Bulldogs have not been able to deny that? How much has that turned some of these games, Jackson, where it's been one guy on the other side and you knew who it was going to be going in, that got his paws on that ball late and you just couldn't stop him no matter what you did?
Yeah, it's happened a few times for sure this year. It's been, outside of the UNLV game, it feels like it's been a while since the Bulldogs have successfully executed some of that stuff at the end. The Utah Valley and Stephen F. Austin games were close ones. They converted late, but definitely had some get away. Northridge was one that always sticks in my mind. Nevada the first time around. Some teams have they've got a more certain option to go to. And talk about hot hands. The UNLV game, getting it to David Douglas, he hit the zone three. He hadn't made a three all game long as that thing was and as many points as there had been. So, yeah, that's also one where they drew something up for a guy that necessarily didn't have the best night, and it still worked out. So, I think still final seconds, try to get that shot for Heidbreder, but yeah, there's just no foolproof plan, I don't think, with the roster that they've got to work with.
Well, the one guy who can get the shot more than anybody else is Collins, because he's handling the ball. The question about whether you want him to be the one taking the big shot or not, that's another issue. It's still a work in progress, and like I said, I'd like to see this team get another year with the same roster, but I guess that's asking too much. All right, Jackson, as I let you go here in 30 seconds, will it be respectable? It was respectable in town. It was kind of an arm's length after that 20-7 run by Utah State in the first half. The Bulldogs never got close enough to make it competitive, particularly. It looked better at the final score than it actually was, but it also was not an embarrassment. What happens tonight?
Yeah, I don't expect it to be dangerously close for the Aggies here, but I think as long as the Bulldogs play a decent game, they'll cover that spread. I think it's really got to unravel and get away from them for it to be 20-plus ugly, which it's a lot easier to happen when you're playing in front of that crowd. It can definitely get there. I'm not saying it's a given that the Bulldogs are going to cover this one, but I think if they just play, Coach Wahlberg talks about lack of turnovers and the three-point shots. Usually if they do those two things well, they're going to be pretty close. And I think as long as those numbers are respectable, they can stick within 10 or so. And if things get ugly, if things really unravel, it can certainly get into the 20-plus range.
Well, they have definitely continued to compete all year long, that's for sure, and we'll see what this month of February brings us, and then you and I will be having the conversation, obviously, about what the future may hold. That's up to Garrett and to Saul, but certainly, as you and I have talked over and over again, if you're going to make a change, whoever comes in had better bring a boatload of money along, because gone are the days of saying, this guy knows his X's and O's, so he's going to be the next John Wooden. He better be the next John Wooden with a little bit of Bill Gates tied into it, because it is just the stark reality of what's going on right now in college athletics. Jackson, very quickly, anything on the board, special-wise, where are we at?
Yes, it's currently 50% off the year. Lock in for the full 2026 calendar year and a little more. It comes up to just a little over $5 a month that way if people take advantage of that.
It's a great deal. Check it out at barkboard.com. You and I will talk on Friday. We'll do the postmortem on tonight, and we'll certainly be talking back in ball sports as well. Jackson, appreciate it. Talk to you on Friday. Take care.
All right, you too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Tactical host Jackson Moore, take a break, come back, tell you about the schedule, hand it off to Phillies on location in Tulare at World Ag Expo today, tomorrow, and Thursday. More to come after this as the Bulldog Hour continues on this Tuesday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 254, a couple minutes on the show, hand it off to Phillies. Great show behind the bench. On location at World Ag Expo in Tulare the next 3 days. Phil will be with you for 2 hours today, 3 to 5, and then he'll be heading back into town for Clovis West and Clovis North tonight at 6:45. Tell you all about the schedule. Right now, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering, planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. More information, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net or precisioneng.net if you'd prefer. And again, Ed does such a great job of supporting athletics throughout the valley and also through the Lyles College of Engineering, the great fundraising for his alma mater, Fresno State. The goal, always to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years, and we commend Ed for that. And we always note that a lot of those graduates from the Lyles College of Engineering on campus go to work for Ed at Precision Civil Engineering. As far as schedule goes for tonight, I mentioned the high school game, 6:45 tonight, Clovis West and Clovis North. So Phil will be at World Ag Expo 3 to 5 today in Tulare, and then he'll head back in for that game tonight with Paul Metters. The Lakers and the Spurs, 7:15 on 790 tonight, our sister station, the Deuce. Lakers losing to OKC without SGA last night. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander still out, but Jalen Williams came back. And I will say this one more time, much like the Warriors in their heyday with Durant, if the Thunder are healthy, everybody's playing for second place this particular playoff year. If they continue to be banged up, maybe someone has a shot. But I'll tell you what, when they're healthy, they stifle you defensively in a way that nobody else can. And the Lakers found that out last night, and they get a real big test with the Wemby and the Spurs coming in tonight. As far as the lineup for us, Phil normally 3 to 6 with his outstanding show behind the bench. It moves around, of course, play by play. You've got Phil 3 to 5 today as we were talking, and then he'll be back to 3 to 6 later in the week. Also want to mention that normally on Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with our good friend Rod Avedikian, a little bit different this week because Phil is in Tulare for World Ag Expo, but he'll be back there. We want to remind you that at Fashion Furniture, El Paso, across from River Park, where you find the best furniture on the planet, nothing like it in all of California. They have the President's Day sales going on right now, so stop on in and see Rod and check out the furniture. When Phil is there, Good Eats as well. You can always reach Phil on the Lee's Air hotline, 559-320-1430. Paul Metters, two fine shows, Sunbird Sports Show, 6 o'clock on Wednesdays on our sister station, the Deuce 790, and then on Saturday mornings at First Ring Sports, his long-running, outstanding show at First Ring Sports, Central Valley Sports Report, 10 a.m. to noon. We are with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, TDAD1, at att.net, TDAD, the number one, at att.net. First names are fine. Everything for the station, 1430ESPNFresno.com. You find the live links and podcasts there. Get the app, makes it a lot easier to listen. And then I want to remind you very quickly here that not only do we have the Lakers twice this week, including Thursday against the Mavs, we've got the All-Star Game over the weekend from the Intuit Dome. So have all those festivities as well. We also have Fresno Pacific Baseball coming up, college basketball, a lot of Sharks games as well, and we're not that far away from the baseball season starting. And by the way, one final note, I'm talking about the Major League Baseball season, one final note about the All-Star Game. Curry is out. Brandon Ingram will replace Curry. Curry being bothered by what they're calling runner's knee. It's an inflammation. So he's sitting out the end of the first half of the season, if you will, and will also sit out the All-Star Game. Luka has been out. I don't know if he's coming back for the Lakers tonight or he's going to come back against the Mavs. And I don't know if he's going to play in the All-Star game over the weekend either. So keep all that in mind. We'll keep you updated about that. And again, stay tuned for Phil. He is at World Ag Expo. If you're around Tulare, stop by today, tomorrow, Thursday. Hopefully the weather is going to hold out okay. Tomorrow it might be a little problematic. You can always reach Phil on that Lee's Air hotline, 559-320-1430. Thanks to Jorge. Thanks to Jackson. We'll see you guys tomorrow with Jack Furtick. Stay tuned for Phil. High school basketball on 1430 tonight. The Lakers on 790 World Ag Expo. Coming up with Phil in just a moment on KFIG Fresno.